Okay, well, let me start by also thanking the organizers for giving me the possibility to discuss some of the results that we have been obtaining studying the behavior of models for molecular motors and how they move collectively. So I will basically discuss two different situations. I will first talk about the relevance of hydrodynamics in the collective transport of molecular motors, and then in the second part, I will also show how the presence of confinement can cooperate with the activity, the underlying activity of molecular motors to give rise to new phenomenology in their effective behavior. So I'm at the end of this session, so I had this introduction about active systems. I think that by now you have already seen flocks of birds, we have seen bacteria, we have talked about self-propelled objects. So I will be talking yet at another type of active system at the smaller scales, which is basically related to the molecular motor motion inside the cell. So basically it's a question of scales, and the idea is to try to understand generic features that determine their behavior coming out of how the energy that is consumed, in this case by the molecular motors, allow them to displace. And basically, we have also heard about molecular motors before, so you know that these are protein complexes that you can find them in the membrane, so there are whole families. I will be thinking in molecular motors that can attach to biopolymers like actin or like ion microtubules, and then using the polarity of the biofilaments, they can displace along it, and therefore they play a role in generating stresses, but also in controlling transport inside cells. So as I think that Safran showed a nice picture of myosin moving along one of these filaments. So if one looks at, tries to understand the basic mechanism of an isolated motor, they are typically characterized by this stop and step motion, in which then basically they stay around. I will come back to this later, and then as part of the, when they consume ATP, part of the chemical reaction cycle, then they can move over a period of the filament. And therefore, if we, I will try to motivate that this is very, this particular type of displacement has important consequences. So when it comes to understanding the basic mechanism of how these motors move, again, it really is associated to how the motor consumes or hydrolyzes ATP, and as a function of, as part of this chemical cycle, then it changes the binding to the filament, and therefore it typically stays in a part of the cycle in a more bound and less bound state. So a simplified model that tries to capture that, I mean, is this two-state model that I will be using, in which basically the motor stays either in a mostly weakly bound, mostly diffusive state, or strongly bound, where it tends to then end up in a particular point in the filament. And if the transition between these two, the rate of transition between these two states doesn't satisfy detailed balance and the potential is not symmetric, then it's well known that that gives rise to rectification in the displacement of the motor. And I think that's kind of like the basic, at least for a physical point of view, the very basic understanding on how motion appears. Once one realizes that there is this essential mechanism, it's tempting to go up in the scales and even coarse grain. I mean, going from the actual chemical process to this two-state model is already coarse graining in the description of what the actual, how the displacement, how chemical energy is converted into a mechanical displacement. But if one forgets about the details of this cycle, then one can realize that this rectification leads to an asymmetric diffusive process. And this type of description is also very useful when one is interested in start looking at the behavior of large ensembles of molecular motors. And therefore, what I will be discussing now in this first part of the talk is basically what are these models useful for, and what are their limitations? So as I said, I will not touch about the detail. I mean, there are models that try to describe the details of the chemical processes that involve a number of parameters, but one can really relate in more carefully the chemomechanical coupling. But at this two-state level, essentially, I think it's at least can be regarded as a basic model that where you can describe the transition between the more bound and less bound state. You can, I mean, this is just formulas, but I don't have to go into detail. So you can actually describe the two states in which it is. You can write down the flux, identify an effective flux. And that's nice because it actually it gives a physical insight in the sense that this effective flux is like a diffusion in an effective potential where despite the periodicity of the filament, the potential is not has a certain tilt as soon as you break detail balance. So there is a clear fundamental basis for that. And I will now try to see what we can learn with these models for the particular problem of how molecular motors move inside a cell together. And actually, with a particular interest to try to understand the fact that when molecular motors, I mean, there are motion inside cells that have been observed for a long time by biologists. Like, for example, this is a plant cell, and you can see all these particles moving with a quite well-defined direction of motion along them. Or, for example, this, I always forget the name, this is a particularly long plant cell where the wall actually is covered by microtubules, and you see this line here, the polarity of the microtubules at the two sides is different, and actually there is a flow inside the cell that essentially is correlated clearly with the alignment or with this directionality. So I think that by now there is quite clear evidence that this type of flow, so some of the flows observed inside cells, were referred to generically as cytoplasmatic streaming, emerge from the motion of motors inside them. So motors do not move alone, they move together. And as I say, they can move together to drive vesicles and so on. So if we want to try to address what's going on, we need to think in how they do that together. So as I said, it is tempting to say, well, what about if I consider one of these coarse grain models, I can go to larger scales and then try to see how they move together. And actually, there is quite a number of works that have characterized collective motion of these TACEP processes. And as you change the density, they can form structures. They can form a bunching. And in confined environments, obviously they can give rise to a certain diffusive fluxes inside the cell, so inside the geometry. So we try to include the effect of the fact that when these TACEP-like particles move along a lane, they are in a medium that is liquid-like. So when they make a jump, then you could say, well, this jump has a certain associated force, which is the force between the motor and the filament, and then this force generates a flow. So if I have now another motor nearby, somewhere along the filament, then that the flow, the hydrodynamic flow generated by the motor that makes the jump, well, I mean, this cannot make the jump because it's in the wrong position, but if this one would make the jump, then would generate a velocity that would bias the jumping probabilities of all the other motors along the filament in a way that would decay as a distance from one from the other. So that is a non-local model where you have this non-local interaction, but you can plug that into an effective modification of the jumping rates of this TACEP process. And actually, that will also mean, for example, that if you have here a particle that is passively diffusive, then that will also feel this bias velocity, so they will have a free ride. So the flow field that generates here also will help to transport them. So this hydrodynamic coupling is not only relevant to determine how these motors move together, but then they also generate a flow that will transport everything else that is around. So that is enough to indeed generate an increase in velocity. So this is the average velocity. Sorry, now you have to imagine we have here a number of these motors, and then we change the density along the filament. So this is phi, the density, the fraction of these motors along the filament. And this is the velocity normalized by the velocity of an isolated motor. So we start here at 1, and then if there is no hydrodynamic coupling, then simply the velocity decreases with concentration, and that was known. Now the presence of this additional bias increases the velocity for a while, and at some point then hindrance dominates, and then it decreases again. So that gives an increase of 20%. It's not large, but it's okay. And then also if you look at the mean velocity inside the system, then there is also a finite velocity, so finite flow inside. I forgot to mention, sorry, I have to go back, that there is indirect evidence that in some cases you can have single motors that with a varying velocity, so which can be quite large. So we were wondering to which extent, I mean, this gives you sort of like a slight increase, but not a very large increase. But something, I mean, beyond, so one question that worried us is whether this could be made larger. But what concerns, after doing that, this work, I was more worried about this stepping motion that I was telling you. I mean, I haven't shown the, I haven't said anything about Reynolds number. And yesterday, we saw the Reynolds number for the streaming of objects at different scales. Obviously, here we are talking on a very small scale. Reynolds number is very small. Then we know that we have laminar flow, we have creeping. So if I go back to how a motor really moves, most of the time, so there is this chemical cycle, and then during part of the cycle, it's stepping, but then actually most of the cycle is doing nothing. So now you could wonder, I mean, if it's basically here in this simple-minded two-state model is around that minimum, then it's not really doing anything. So it's not generating any flow. So actually, the flow generated by a motor is not steady. In this tacit model, there is always this Ossian-like or this long-range algebraic coupling, but that's not how it happens. So we decided to revisit the problem, but then including a coarse-grained but not so coarse-grained model, and therefore simulate these two states explicitly, coupled now to an explicit solvent, because I cannot, well, I went very fast describing this, how I put this bias, but when one of these motors jumps, one can estimate the force associated to a displacement, and out of that, you can know which is the velocity everywhere using Ossian, or you could use Blake if you want to take into account the solid boundary, and that typically is just a velocity profile that you know analytically, so that you can just plug that in. So it's non-local, but it's analytic. If one wants to describe this more detailed motion, then one cannot use this simple arguments, these analytic expressions that corresponds to creeping in the steady flow. So what we did was to consider now a simulation method where we had a filament that actually was rigidly attached. The rest is periodic boundary conditions, and then motors experience a certain attraction to the filament, so they typically move within a certain distance of the filament, and they can be in these two states, so they can feel more strongly bound, which would be like this potential, or less bound, so that would reproduce these two states. And then we tune the parameters of this potential, so the periodicity, the ratio between gamma and delta, the rates, and so on, so that basically this is a simulation result for the trajectory that corresponds qualitatively to the type of trajectories that are observed experimentally. Now, because that's for the motor and the filament, and then now we have to fill the rest of the box with a solvent, so we do an explicit solvent simulation. And therefore, that allows us to capture all the hydrodynamics that builds or that develops naturally as a result of the motion. So we do that. This is a technicality. It's called so it's basically as if you do a molecular dynamic simulation, and then you put a momentum conserving thermostat. And that was introduced by Low. And basically, you take pairs of particles, and then you thermostat their relative velocity rather than their velocity as it was done by Anderson. And then you can show that in the hydrodynamic limit, you recover for simple fluid never stoke. So that's just one way to, this is a relatively cheap way to include hydrodynamics in a particle-based model. So that's now, let's see what happens. Let's see if we recover the same that we had before. In order to compare, so here we can easily go from Loewe-Anderson to Anderson thermostat, so we can really switch on and off hydrodynamics. So if we switch off hydrodynamics, basically then we will have, oh sorry, I will be doing simulations of a fraction of these motors moving along the filament, so there are also hardcore interactions between them, so particles or motors cannot overlap. So if there is no hydrodynamics, I can look at what is the mean velocity. So this is a little bit busy plot. So if you look at this upper part of the plot, so this is the mean velocity with respect to the single average velocity of the motor for this two-state model as a function of the fraction of the filament that is occupied by motor. So if you have a motor that has the same size as the period of the filament, then typically these motors will not interact too much among each other. If they are not commensurate, then you have a cooperative effect already, which I mean actually goes back, I think it's Lutz and I think Holger also did some work along these lines, where if you basically have an interaction between two particles, then the interaction between these two can help them to overcome a barrier. So actually you can see we tried different ratios between the radius of the motor and the period of the filament, and typically you can see that there is an enhancement. The particular case in which they are commensurate, the interaction is very, very weak. Okay, so we picked this value, this particular value 1, because this is the case in which, in the absence of hydrodynamics, the interaction is the weakest. Okay, but we obviously you can look at the effect of the flow and of the hardcore interactions. So what do we see now? What we see is, again, this is a busy, so if you look at the red triangles, so we start again at 1, so we normalize by the single motor velocity, and you see the same qualitatively as I had shown you before, you would think. So there is an increase in the velocity. So again, remember that without hydrodynamics would be this open triangle. So there is a clear increase now. The magnitude is much larger. And also, again, at very large volume fractions, there is a decrease, but that's shifted to much higher occupancy. So, and then this is the blue curve. That's for the velocity. As before, the flow, the motion of the motors also lead to a net flow around in the fluid around them. So this tells us that there is this coupling that is much larger, and actually, what is interesting is that when we started looking into what happens, the details of the coupling are quite different, even if you could say, I mean, very roughly there is an increase, but the magnitude of the increase, and actually this may seem a slightly minor effect, minor thing, but here there is like a minimum distance before they're really coupled. And we understand or we explain this different behavior because actually the coupling, even if it's through the solvent, is qualitatively different from the one I showed you before. Actually, so I will come back to this. So typically, without hydrodynamics, what we see is that if we start, I mean, this is one way to see how they correlate. So if we start with particles that are motors that are not very far away from each other, so they tend to move, but then when they jump, it's not particularly correlated. It's only hardcore that will not allow them to jump into each other. But after a few jumps rapidly, their motions will be decorrelated, while the presence of the hydrodynamics, actually, what we see is that there is quite a strong correlation in how they perform the jump. So what we think that's happening is that if one particle is basically moving under the action of this potential that will generate a flow around it, and then if there is another one that is in the diffusive state, then will more easily go over the barrier and jump to the other side. So it's not a coupling through the force. So actually hydrodynamic forces depends on the scale. If you are at the scale of the below a micron, they are smaller than piconewtons, so they are not particularly strong. But the flow is enough to allow them to move. So it's this bias diffusion, if you want. But it's actually, you need that the two are correlated or not too far from each other, because that coupling only happens while this particle is actually experiencing the force. Afterwards, it disappears. So actually, we can do an estimate of what is the typical velocity that a motor induces around it. It's just kind of the force, and then how many you have, and then the coupling decreases as one over the distance, which is this Ossian light. But that will act only over a certain characteristic time. So you can, that gives you a kind of a screening length. So there is a length over which motors will be able to interact. So that also gives you a minimum volume fraction. So I think that explains why we don't see anything here. So if motors on average are too far from each other, they will not really couple, because it's only a transient and evanescent flow that is coupling them. When they start being not that far, then they couple. And so we are used to think that at low Reynolds numbers, we have creeping flow, and then the propagation of the flow is irrelevant. But here, it's really this propagation that gives rise a characteristic length scale over which they will couple. But then it means that rather than being this long-range Ossian-like or Blake-like interaction, it's a more close, shorter-range interaction. So it means that it's less sensitive to confinement. So this kind of coupling may be more efficient in situations where you have particles moving in a confined environment. They don't rely so much on the development of large-scale flows. And it is characteristic of these systems where you have this activation. So it's basically you have like two states. So may wonder if this hydrodynamic transient coupling can be relevant in other situations where you have kind of a chemical process that is associated with these two states, and then you have a different states in which the particle stays during part of this cycle. So we try to characterize it, and so basically we looked, for example, we try to quantify this correlation by seeing what is the characteristic time in which one motor stays at one minimum if a nearby one has jumped. And well, okay, I mean, it's we see that actually in the case of hydrodynamics, which again is this green, then there is an increase. This time tends to decrease because of this coupling compared to, for example, in the absence of any interaction, that would be a relatively uniform distribution of jumping times. So there is this increase in smaller times that tells you that there is this correlation, quantifies this correlation beyond the picture. And this hydrodynamic coupling also has implications. I don't know to which extent that's important for the cell, but you can think that the number of, again, sorry, in this two-state model, the number, a particle will do a number of jumps between the two states on average before it really displaces one period, and that's a measure of the efficiency of the process. So we can compute how many of these on and off jumps they do with and without hydrodynamics as a function of the volume fraction. And again, if you switch off hydrodynamics, and these are the green, the black triangles for these commensurate motors, then you have a certain cost that, not surprisingly, doesn't depend too much on concentration. And then as soon as you have this hydrodynamics, you see, I mean, this is a logarithmic scale, so this is the number of jumps, which is can convert in a measure of the energy cost. So the energy cost decreases significantly. So again, this coupling makes them more efficiently jump, so it costs on average less energy. Now, what happens if we see, so that's the average behavior. So I'm showing you here a movie of, so these are motors moving along the filament. So you don't see the filament, which is this hollow tube. You can guess it. And then this is filled with these solvent particles that you don't see either. So you only see the motors. We start with a random initial distribution of motors along the filament. And then as they move, you will see that depending on the environment, they may move slower or faster. Actually, if there is a density fluctuation and they increase a little bit, then they tend to move a little bit faster. And then as a result of that, we observe generically the formation of a cluster, and that actually tends to be relatively large. Actually, it tends to cover most of the particles, so it depends on the initial volume fraction. So actually, as a function of the volume fraction, we can see the fraction of particles that end up. So this is the average volume fraction. So if it's very, very dilute, we don't see much clustering. But then as soon as, I mean, already at point 17% motors tend to aggregate very efficiently into this single cluster. So that means that it's not only that they go faster, this coupling in itself, here it's a very simplified model because there is nothing else that is really making these motors cooperate with each other. They have this tendency to bunch and to form these large structures. So we also started thinking in what happens now. So obviously this is a 1D geometry. You may wonder what happens if you make, this is with periodic boundary conditions, so you may wonder what happens if you make it larger and larger. So far, we have always observed the formation of one single big cluster, but maybe eventually they could break. That's not clear. Actually, I'm not showing this here. If we look at the average profile, so the density of the motors along this large cluster decreases as a function of the distance from the, not surprisingly, the front has a larger density. And the back, so because of the stochastic nature of this jump between of the chemical cycles, so some motors sometimes are left behind. We also thought, I mean, this is a simulation where rather than having one, now you have an array of these filaments, and then you start seeing, I mean, this is a picture from above, and I've seen that one. So now we were wondering if well, here we start already with the with this ring, I mean, with this cluster, whether these clusters can also correlate transversally. And there seem to, indeed, I mean, there is a certain mode that develops, but again, they correlate significantly. This is the best case scenario if we start with a random distribution of these rings or these arrays of motors. They also tend to synchronize. So I've been focusing on the effect of the of how the velocity changes because of this coupling. One can also think, yeah, only three, okay, because I start earlier, yeah. yeah, it's okay. No, it's okay. It's fine. No, it's okay. I didn't notice when I started. Okay, so one can start thinking in other geometries. For example, if you take now. This is I should have put here a drawing. So this is like a filament in the center of a larger cylinder, and then this is the outside wall, and then it's like you have now a confined, and then you have, if you have motors going in one direction and then going in the other direction, then you can start generating all sort of tunable fountain-like flows. So you can, say, control the type of flows that you induce by now relating the fraction, the volume fraction, or occupation of motors at one or two sides. So that has implications on transport. And then in these 3 minutes, then this is, I wanted in the second part talk about something completely different. Now, I mean, it's related to this confinement, but now again, if one looks at this particular, again, this sort of toy model for a molecular motor, what happens if we think in a geometry that is not simply a cylindrical tube with a given section, but a geometry where a confinement has a certain structure in itself. So now we have motion of motors inside a corrugated environment. And here I will show you, again, this is a very simplified model that I think at least helps to capture the basics of it, although it's a bit simplified. But in this case, you can think of it's a numerical or theoretical analysis. I will not show you here computer simulations. But if you think in the diffusion along a tube, one of these corrugations, then you can think that this is the potential energy that is confining the particle in this along this tube. This you can say if the channel is long, you can say that, well, maybe the particles can reach thermal equilibrium in the transverse direction compared to the time scale in which they diffuse along the channel. And if you do that and assume that you have a local equilibrium in the transverse, y is the transverse direction and x is the direction along the channel, so it's like an equilibrium for a given position, then you can, I mean, fix, propose an approximation that would be decoupling this conditional probability with the density along the channel, and with that you can rederive an effective one-dimensional diffusion energy where the appropriate Smoluchowski equation, here you have the potential that is confining the particles. And here you end up with an effective 1D, where here you have an effective energy that where, if I go back here, if I integrate over the do a homogenization and integrate over the section of the channel, imagine that this is like a hard wall. So it's no potential, but then it's infinite potential when you reach the walls. Then this essentially is the width of the channel, is the section. So you have an effective entropy, you could call, that is associated to the section of the channel. So you end up with a 1D then diffusion where this section enters an, as an effective entropy-like potential. So that's then that this is called an entropic contribution or reduction. And but the nice thing is that you end up with a 1D. And so I'll finish. So you can now couple this two-state model with a simple corrugated channel, and then you end up with an effective, with an effective potential. It's here. That will contain this A and this potential that jumps, makes the motor jump between the two, the one and another. And the funny thing is that if you take even the simplest case where you have a channel that is symmetric, and you take the case where the motor is symmetric, so it would not move, if these two potentials that are symmetric are not in phase, then the effective potential that they call A1 becomes asymmetric, and that gives rise to rectification as well. So that means that the entropic entropic confinement can lead to a rectified motor motion. Okay, so now you can. I think it's another mechanism for a rectification in on the confinement. So I'll just finish here, just emphasizing that for molecular motors, I think that this hydrodynamic coupling is an unsteady cooperative motion that or cooperative mechanism that can be useful, and then that entropy also may be relevant for understanding the motion of molecular motors. So this has been done now with Paolo, Margaretti, and Dan, especially the first part, and the second by Paolo with PhD student and Miguel Rubios in Barcelona. And thank you very much for your attention.
Of experimental input. We have looked very hard for this clustering of kinesins on microtubules for a different reason, because we were thinking there was elastic coupling. There was some reason to assume that. And we haven't seen anything. And it should also be possible to see it in chymographs of single molecule fluorescence assays when you have, say, two motors or three motors coming together. And as far as I can remember, at least it never jumped out at us that there is a change in velocity when two motors are moving next to each other.
Okay.
Have you seen anybody, or has anybody tried that in experiments?
I haven't seen that. That's why I mentioned at the beginning that as far as I've seen, I haven't been able to find explicit experimental evidence of that. Yeah.
We looked really hard, and I can show you the videos
yeah, okay,
later.
Maybe it would be interesting.
There was just nothing.
Yeah.
And another comment, maybe. Like Nikta showed in her talk, the tracks, of course, are moving like crazy, right? Driven by, in the cell, driven by myosins pushed around. And so I think this sort of static tunnel picture is probably not right. And also maybe the hydrodynamics in sort of a stationary background is probably not right, because the whole cytoskeleton, including
yeah.
the tracks,
okay.
is pushed and pulled around very vigorously while these motors are trying to make their way along the
right.
microtubules.
So in which, I mean, I would like then to know, that because then it's a question, again, of time scales, because as I said, so this hydrodynamic flow has this time scale that is possible to estimate associated to the working. So again, even if it's dynamic, it's a question whether it happens on faster or on a slower time scales than this one.
Should be more or less the same, because it's, yeah. again, the same type of motor.
So then they could interfere as well. Right? So they could.
Yeah, I have a question about this Fick-Jacobs equation or approximation. Can you say something about when this approximation is valid? I mean, it seems to be this equilibration in the lateral direction, how it seems a very severe constraint, and
yeah.
and when can you really apply it?
So I haven't said that. It's possible to show rigorously that this Fick-Jacobs is the first term, so it's the first is the equation you get in a systematic expansion in gradients along of the profile along the channel direction. So basically what you assume is that this gradient is small enough, or what is the same, that actually you have the time to that's one way to mathematically see it. Physically I would in a way you need to reach equilibrium. So the time scale in which you diffuse on across the channels would be smaller than the characteristic time scale in which you displace over this length scale in which the width is changing. So for passive systems, that's purely diffusive. In this case, then, since you have the self-propulsion, it's slightly more stringent because it's you're comparing a diffusive scale with an advective scale. Yeah?
Hello? Yeah, I'm sorry. So we measured the wait time distribution in live cells, and you seem to have this nice, well, a new effect, which is an increase at very short times for your hydrodynamic coupling. But I don't think it actually will be there in reality, because it's the wait time set by the Michaelis-Menten kinetics. So at very short times where you've got it going up, it has to be pulled down by just the enzyme can't go that fast if it has to go around a catalytic cycle. So that was just one comment. I mean, it's an interesting possibility, but I think it would be maybe a second order thing to the Michaelis, to underlying Michaelis-Menten kinetics.
Well, I mean, maybe it would, I mean, just before we continue. So I would like to know more about that, because again, as I said, this is just for one particular type of a chemical process, but it could be possible to introduce a more realistic.
Sure, yeah, I mean, it sounds fun. The other thing was about cytoplasmic streaming. I know that actin myosin gels and amoeba have cytoplasmic streaming. I don't know cilia with dynines have cytoplasmic streaming. I wasn't aware that vesicles with microtubules do cytoplasmic streaming. Is that true?
I mean, as far as I understand, cytoplasmic streaming is referred to generically at this motion that they observe. I mean, it's very different.
Sure.
For example, the example I showed you in the introduction, which is for this very anisotropic tube,
right,
for that particular plant.
Does it have cilia on that? Or?
No, I think in that case, they don't. These are
okay,
really
that, I didn't know.
But
that,
that's
yeah.
Very different from other types of cytoplasmic streaming that happens in among, say, vesiculated organelles, where then the deformation, for example.
That's new to me. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
So I also would have a few questions regarding the details. I mean, one aspect I noted is that you seem to use the idea of a slip bond model like kinesin, but the myosins, for example, tend to be catch bonds, which means that actually the other models would not facilitate their movement, but to the contrast would actually make it harder for them to move.
Sorry, what would they make harder to move?
Yeah, I mean, the basic idea of your model is that some motors pull, it creates a flow, and this helps the other motors to proceed. But in the case of myosins and myosin 2, it's the other way around. If you pull on them, they are harder to get off the substrate. They're so-called catch bonds.
No, I agree. I mean, depending on the type of motion for each motor.
And a similar question would be the exact nature of the mechanical connection between the cargo. I guess the hydrodynamics couples thermos to the cargo, doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
And the motor, okay, it must depend on this linkage somehow.
Yes. Well, I mean, again, in the simple model, there is like a one-to-one correspondence. So we do not take into account the internal kinetics of how it's coupled to the cargo. But I would think that again, it's a question then on how essentially how strong this bond is over the scale in which these motors are actually working.
Okay, anything else? Okay, if not, let's thank all the speakers again. Thank you.